Championship selection process is confidential and private internally within the organization, and we certainly, Oak Hill's been a wonderful member club and a USGA host club many times, and so we think we've had great partnerships with them and look forward to exploring whatever they'd like to include us in the future.
Is it tougher these days getting invitations from clubs for the smaller USGA? I mean, everybody wants to open.
Yeah.
But the other thing,
well, you know, that's a great question. I chaired the championship committee for 4 years during the downturn, and I would tell you that we did not have the plethora of sites that we had had, invitations that we've had historically. Certainly seen a rebound of that. And, you know, we're fortunate because our national championships are coveted, and we have a lot of great clubs in this country that would like to participate or host a championship. So a little bit of a blip during, you know, that 08 to maybe 11 or 12, but we're very fortunate. We have a lot of great member clubs, and we get fabulous invitations, and we're certainly proud of our championship schedule, but we're proud of the clubs that invite us to come share their history
and
have a national championship.
Has anybody in the Chicago area invited you lately? I don't think there's anything on the calendar right now.
You know, I don't, because I moved out of the championship committee chair a couple years ago, I don't keep quite the tab on it that I've had in the past. I don't think anything comes to recollection, but that's that's a constant moving needle, and I'm sure there's some as great a golf as there is in Chicago. I'm sure there's interest from some clubs to host championships. You know, our process is now with the future Amateur Sites Committee and a future Open Sites Committee, it's one, there's a clearinghouse. You know, historically, if we had, for the amateur championships, with the exception of the U.S. Amateur and the U.S. Women's Amateur, we had subcommittee, championship subcommittees, where those committee members then helped solicit those invitations, and then they actually acted on them. They would pass them on to the championship committee for ratification. When Mike Davis went in as the senior director of rules and competitions, we changed that process, and Jim Heiler was the championship chair, where we have this clearinghouse. So we get all invitations into one place now. And so, for example, in our prior process, if a club issued an invitation for the U.S. Mid-Amateur, for example, and we thought, or the U.S. Mid-Amateur Championship Committee thought that maybe it wasn't a right fit for that championship, or they had too many invitations, and we used to actually have a vote of clubs against clubs. And if a club didn't get a championship, then it kind of went away. Now the future Amateur Sites Committee receives all the invitations. Then those are vetted by our SICs, our staff in charge, and the chairman. Site visits occur by the SICs. And if those invitation letters usually start out as letters of interest now, since we've been doing this a while. And then they say, you know, what championship do you think fits? And so it's so much better process, because we don't lose a club that maybe had gone down the road for a U.S. Mid-Amateur. We're not fortunate enough to get it, and then they were off into abyss. And so now, for one of the things that we did is we don't pit clubs against each other and have vote-offs anymore. That was always an awkward thing that I thought. Now, you know, it happens maybe in the Walker Cup, and even the U.S. Open, we try to move the chess pieces around the board. We don't want this. You know, we got responsibility to do things geographically, and it's not the only point of the U.S. Open site selection, but it's one that's a consideration. But we try to do it in a such broader view now that doesn't put clubs in a possibility to be compromised. So,
Tom, a few of us in the media that have all been on the golf beat 30 years plus, or our whole careers, there's never been, at some point ahead on the schedule, a USGA event scheduled for the Chicagoland area. just after the final putt falls or is conceded on Sunday, looking ahead, we have nothing. And for decades, that's never been the case. Any thoughts on this market? I don't think I have to tell you there's a lot of great clubs here and a lot of great golf, and I'm sure you're seeing it this week, even though the week's not even over yet.
Yeah, Olympia Fields has done a fabulous job, and the two great golf courses, and you know the U.S. Amateur with 312 players. It's really, we're fortunate to be able to go to sites like this that have 36 holes in one place. It's so much better administratively and operationally, and so very fortunate. And you know these two great quality golf courses here. You know the site invitations from Chicago. While our practice has never been to solicit and go to solicit, even during the downturn, we may have tried to be a little more proactive just to make it known that we were open to invitations. I don't think the USGA ever wants to get in a situation where we are knocking on doors for championship sites.
Classifieds and golf.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully we don't get to that. But that said, I'm sure you gentlemen could pass the information along to this community that we would always welcome to come to Chicago. You know, Chicago Golf Club, one of our five founding clubs, Charles Blair McDonald, you know, for all intents and purposes, our founder and first United States amateur champion, his roots here in Chicago, and, you know, we've had such wonderful history here. It's just one of the great golfing cities in the U.S., and we would always be hopeful that we'll have many invitations from, as you say, the wonderful plethora of clubs that are in the Chicagoland.
What's the best part of being USGA president? What's the worst?
Well, it's a privilege of a lifetime. You know, I'm humbled and honored to have had this opportunity. I don't think there's the best is in my perspective is to get a chance to work with a really talented staff led by Mike and others, and have watched that staff grow and grow from a talent perspective and capability perspective, and then work with a board or an executive committee that's unbelievably successful and talented and are just all because of their love and passion for the game, just trying to contribute and help with the strategic direction of our organization. We've had a great group, a great interaction the last 2 years, and it's just been very fortunate and blessed that I've able to have that that journey of mine. And you know, the best part to you know my USGA journey. I'm quick to tell people it's just my journey. It's not the journey, and I would argue that's probably not the best journey. But to be able to have come through the journey that I did and end up to be president, I mean, you know, it's just a great privilege.
Tom, when you look at the U.S. Open, I think in 90 you were at Medina, and the year after that, I believe, was Hazeltine. But if you look starting 92 going forward through the ones that you just handed out, it looks like there's a stretch there where there's only four U.S. Opens in the Midwest in about a 33-year window. Is there an easy answer to how that happens? Or, you know, people say, geez, it seems like the USGA is avoiding the Midwest.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that – I know the PGA's had more events here. Are you trying to stay out of each other's way, or is there a way of saying why the Open doesn't get out to somewhere between Pittsburgh and Denver a little more often?
Well, it's a good question. You two know what the production of the U.S. Open's evolved to in that time. And frankly, it causes the available clubs that might issue invitations to have shrunk because can they handle the production of the U.S. Open? I mean, we talked during the Chicago District anniversary, and I did something I think you guys might have gone at the University Club where the media was there too and asked similar questions. And, you know, you just think of the wonderful golf here in Chicago, but, you know, I played a few of the courses in the past 10 days that, you know, are just gems, but, you know, they couldn't handle the production of the U.S. Open. And so I think that's caused it to shrink. And there is, seems to be a shortage of courses in the Midwest that could be able to produce or handle that production. You know, we're fortunate to continue to look at sites and get creative. I mean, Aaron Hill's obviously got in the mix on a golf course that we had the U.S. Amateur there, and of course a wonderful test of golf there, and a lot of capabilities operationally. And you know, we continue to look at sites, and you know, we announced that we're going to go back to the Country Club, which is a site that maybe we thought we couldn't handle operationally. So, you know, our team led by Mike Butts and Reg Jones that handle the outside the ropes matters at the U.S. Open, you know, we continue to go to clubs frequently to see if there's our innovation or our ability to produce this now or our outside-the-box thinking like we had at Marion. And, is there other clubs like that that could raise their hand and send an invitation? So I don't think we're not. Look, I'm a Midwest guy, right? I of course we want the U.S. Open to go to the Midwest. As I said, you know, geographics is not the only indicator or criteria in which to take the U.S. Open. Obviously, number one is does the golf course test the greatest players in the world, and number two, can we present operationally and from a production standpoint what the U.S. Open has grown to outside the ropes. But we would always look to explore sites, whether they be new sites like Aaron Hills or other sites that might now become operationally capable because of the way we present the U.S. Open or the fact that we could be innovative in doing so.
You know, Tom, some people have suggested, I've heard it called the miracle at Marion, Mike Davis, the miracle worker. It's almost like with what you pulled off at Marion, people are starting to think you can almost take it anywhere again and find a way to make your whole footprint around the Open work if you could make it work there the great way that you did.
Well, we had Haverford College. You know, if you have Marion sitting there in Ardmore, Pennsylvania, you don't have the college there across the street. As much as you would like to have made that work operationally, it couldn't. Look, Mike did a wonderful job in getting that golf course ready inside the ropes, but our operational teams really were... they were innovative, and we also got the neighborhood to buy into this concept of having this neighborhood U.S. Open with the property owners along Golf House Road. So, yeah, there was a lot of interesting outside-the-box thinking that went into that Marion Open. And you know, I think we would look favorably to go back to Marion, but I think if we did, we might see something operationally slightly different than we had it, because, you know, you always want to improve. You always want to make sure that you continue to present the U.S. Open for our spectator experience the best way we can. So it's a constant moving bar, but I think we would look forward to exploring those possibilities in a variety of courses that might be interested in considering issuing an invitation for the U.S. Open again.
You're 9 years out now with the Open awarded.
Through 24.
Yeah. Can you take a break now for the next one comes out? Or, I mean, what's the timetable of thinking when you have to award 25 or 26? Or will you take a year or so off and let things kind of catch up a little bit?
I think that's likely the conventional thinking right now. You know, you don't want to hamstring these clubs with the preparation and certainly the corporate hospitality piece, which clubs assist in, because, you know, we got to make sure we're not too far out in front of what that footprint's going to look like 9 years from now. And so, look, we got pretty out of the ordinary that we would announce three sites in a row like that, but we thought they were so special for a variety of reasons. I mean, maybe some would not consider Pinehurst as special because we had been there recently and, of course, had the wonderful back-to-backs just a year ago. But you figure that you could bring the Country Club back in since the first time since 1988 and, again, celebrate what Mamet did there in 13, you know, arguably one of the most significant events in American golf, that, and one of our five founding clubs as well. And then to go back to L.A., for the first time since 48 and never having been at LA Country Club, I know that my entire life in the USGA, which is 25 plus years, people have been speculating about a possibility of an LA Country Club US Open. And it generally was, you know, thanks but no thanks from the club's perspective. And there was, you know, never an invitation issue. I saw an article recently where Sandy Tatum even said that he spent long times with inquiries from the club fielding them, because he had such a romantic connection with LA Country Club. So we announced those three sites because we thought, well, there's a wow factor here. I mean, with those sites, and so it does put us off 9 years. And I think we can probably, take a deep breath and assess what's on the horizon, but we continue to get interest from a lot of great clubs, and so it requires some attention to what I say move the chess pieces around the board.
We'll say when you announced the Walker Cup that, like, well, that's as big a thing as you want to have based on where it is and what they've always been.
I would have agreed with you on that premise when we had it, and of course we were tickled by that invitation. The fact that we had an opportunity to take that great international match to Southern California was another exciting aspect. I would not have hedged a bet at the time that we would have been fortunate enough to get an invitation to host the U.S. Open there. But, you know, the stars line up sometimes, and Dick Shorts, who was the just immediate past president of the club, he was the champion of this, and he's the one who convinced his membership in a very transparent process, as you know, because they had a public vote on it. He convinced them that they should issue the invitation, and I think while we were all hopeful, we didn't want to, we weren't going to handicap that process, because I think other presidents or other leaders at LA Country Club maybe had gone down that road historically. But Dick did it, and the membership, as you know, they embraced it, you know, substantially. Well over 90% of the members wanted it. So exciting time for us. So I think we're out to 24, as you guys know and said, and I think, we'll probably take some time to take a deep breath and assess this.
What do you think the USGA will be? Where will you be with controlling the ball, if possible,
the
equipment, or everything else?
Well, I hope we're still handling those governing responsibilities with great conviction and great diligence, because that's really what one of those things, as I say, that was decided in that room in New York City in December of 1894, that's the primary core responsibility of the organization, to write and interpret the rules and a lot of rulemaking functions that we acquired since that time, which is certainly equipment. So I'd like to think that our identity and brand has grown, and our governance responsibilities, which we do jointly with the RNA, continue to preserve and protect golf going forward. So there's a great group here led by Mike on the staff. Our nominating committees have sought and obtained people with great passion and conviction to carry that flag. So I'm optimistic, and most that know me, I'm not really an optimistic person, but I'm optimistic that USGA is in wonderful hands right now with Mike at the helm, and I think we'll be continuing to do what we've been doing for, which will now almost be at that point, 130 years.
Yeah, we know how far big guys hit it these days. We saw the PGA last week, these kids out here getting beyond comprehension. Should there be bifurcation of the rules? Mopes like me hit it that far, but they have to have a governor on it.
You know, you guys know our position about this. It's longstanding, been stated, and I certainly am a proponent of it, and that is, you know, the charm of golf is that we are playing by a single set of rules. And it's the same rules that are being played out here this afternoon. Playing rules, the equipment rules, and what's going on in the PGA Tour this week, and in the round of golf I played this morning at Chicago Golf Club. So that's our romantic attachment to the sport, and I think there isn't any point of view that departs from that within the USGA, and we think that's the game that we want to preserve and protect, and I'm hopeful that point of view will prevail for a long time.
Tom, in the case of announcing Pinehurst, obviously you had two successful opens there last year, but 24, was it a case of the 10-year cycle that comes up with some clubs, or was it also the because of the 25th anniversary of Payne Stewart, did the timing just seem right to go back there?
Well, I think we've had a great partnership and run with Pioneer since 1999 when Payne won. And we think those experiences since then have gotten better. You know, frankly, the Dedman family's been such a great partner, not only from a championship perspective, but just their support of the USGA. And after the duration, I think there was even a greater appeal about how this was a different U.S. Open and one that really hardened back to what the Tufts family built there and what Donald Ross had envisioned and built around the turn of the century. So I think, you know, again, we react to invitations, don't we? And Bob Dedman wanted us back and certainly extended an invitation while we were there and last year. And I think, you know, the back-to-back Opens were fabulous. And we you know, I've said many times since, we hopefully we're governing and administering the game humbly, because you don't want to be too egotistical about it, but that those two championships came off fabulously. But, you know, there was a certain amount of risk associated with that, and we thought the benefits outweighed the risk. But there were risks, and we really could not have pulled that off any better or without any less glitches, and there was virtually none. And so we just get excited about the chance to go back there. And when Pinehurst was quick to invite us back, and we think it's really become one of our tried and true treasured U.S. Open sites, we were quick to try to get that back in the schedule.
Tom, how would you assess the new broadcast deal so far? Obviously, some of the things that Fox is doing, people have said they really like, and there's other things that people maybe haven't quite warmed up to. I realize you're probably still in what they call the honeymoon period, but what are you seeing so far? What's been your first impressions of what they've brought to your broadcast at your championships?
Well, I don't think we could be any happier with our broadcast arrangement. Fox is, first of all, if you watch the effort that they put in and the manpower that they exhibit in our three Open championships all summer, just this is a priority of theirs. We knew or thought that when we got into this arrangement, even though they hadn't done golf, that they would push the envelope innovatively like they have in other sports and cause all of our spectators and viewers to have a different and hopefully an enhanced experience. I think that's what you saw at Chambers Bay. Now, we knew that, you know, there was going to be some learning curve, but I can tell you that when you watch, and I've gone back and watched all the broadcasts, when you watch their performance at Chambers Bay, and I actually thought the final day was fabulous. Joe Buck and Greg Norman let the golf course play out. Not a lot of talking. Let's watch golf. Let's watch golf shots. And the excitement and the theater and the drama that went into Sunday at the U.S. Open, I thought they did fabulous. But as you move through our Senior Open Championship, Women's Open Championship, they continue to get better. I was watching the telecast yesterday, and I just think they're coming more into their own. But Fox is, they are and will be a great partner because they are focused on elevating our brand with theirs. And they're focused on making the viewing experience in golf the best in golf. Now, we had a great run with NBC and Golf Channel and ESPN, and they did all those things, told great stories for us. We know that Fox is committed to doing just that, and I think there's evidence of it. You know, as I move around the golf world, since Chambers Bay, people are talking to me all the time about Fox and the quickly identifiable improvement that's occurred because they're getting comfortable. They're moving into their own, and they will continue to push the envelope technologically and innovatively, and then we're excited about that.
Tom, when we all saw you at the dinner last fall, the discussion was on the table about having a U.S. Senior Women's Open. Since then, you've announced it, but then we really haven't heard much. I know you're a couple years off from having the first championship yet, but what's developing in that direction? Are you already starting to scout sites for the first couple of those who might get them? What's happening on that front?
Yeah, we are. We couldn't be more excited about that. That was a decision that's gone, you know, the USGA has looked at for a long time. We think now is the time to put that into the complexion of our championship schedule. And you know, it's the one sector of golfers that we weren't hosting a national championship for. And you know, if we're going to be a relevant leading golf organization and one that conducts national championships and governs with the conviction and the diligence I referenced, then you know, we thought it was important to bring the Senior Women's Open into the schedule. So we are looking at sites, and again, you know, that's got a number of clubs that have shown great interest in it, and we try to move through that so we can figure out exactly what that championship will look like in its inaugural stages. So John Bodenhammer, who leads our rules and competitions staff, and is working diligently with those clubs that have shown some interest to try to get to a point where we could make an announcement about one of those sites soon. And we're excited about that. And, you know, we have to try to figure out what does that championship look like based on the Legends Tour that they have and clubs that, you know, the operational piece. What clubs could host this championship? Because, you know, we have to figure out, does it look like a U.S. amateur, or does it look closer to one of our Open Championship? So we're going through that process right now, and accelerated one, frankly, because we want to conduct this. We said we're going to conduct it in 18, and so we want to bring this to a head and make an announcement for. We'd like to probably announce a couple sites at the outset, but that's we're working through that now.
You got the age limit set on that?
Yeah, it'll be 50.
Yeah. I remember the Senior Open, the first one was 55.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Everybody said, wait a minute now, there's somebody who's 50 who isn't in it.
Yeah.
The Arnold Palmer rule was something.
Yeah, well, you know, to defend our crew a little bit, you know, there was a senior tour at the time, too, and they were took somewhat of a lead to bring that championship to it. And, you know, initially they had some discussion about surrounding that age limit. And we certainly think and hope that the Senior Women's Open can have the positive impact that on that senior women's golf like the Senior Men's Open had on what was then the Senior Tour and now the Champions Tour.
Pretty tiny. Yeah. How was the new addition at Far Hills, the wing attributed to the greatest golfer of all time, Jack Nicklaus, working out that just opened this year?
It's fabulous. And, you know, again, we try not to go around patting ourselves on the back, but you know, our facility staff, and Rand Jarris and Robert Williams and Mike Trollstar, our curator, you know, if you go up there, and I encourage you guys both to get there, you absolutely cannot tell that this was not always part of the mansion. I mean, we did a very good job on blending that in and making it look like part of what's been there. It's such an interesting and beautiful room with great innovative technology, interactive technology, to watch the Nicklaus era from a variety of different segments of that era. It's beautiful, and I think you always check your litmus test on that by what, in this case, Jack and Barbara and the family thought, and I can tell you that they were just moved by it.
Tom, finally, any other message you'd like to send to golfers, at least the ones that will hear us anyway around Chicago, but I mean golfers in general, about the USGA's thoughts on anything from pace of play to any message you'd like to get out to golfers everywhere?
Well,
on growth of the game or things like that?
You know, the USGA is contributing significant assets to our health of the game initiatives, and we are trying to work and collaborate with other organizations, PGA of America, the PGA Tour, the Masters Tournament Foundation, to try to bring people into the game and enhance the enjoyment of golf, whether it be the time to take to play it or how we embrace the game. We think it's important. Yes, we're a governing organization, but if we're going to have a game to govern, we have to be concerned with the game's health. So we are contributing assets to that and trying to be thoughtful in the initiatives that we sponsor and contribute to. All of the organizations are operating on the same page, and we don't have one organization running an initiative that's either in competition with or not collaborating with another. So we feel good about where that's evolved, but we'll continue to try to make sure that we can support a game that's welcoming, that invites people from all walks of life to play it, and when they get here, that they can enjoy it and do it in a busy lifestyle that we have, and still embrace the game. So that's one of the things. The other thing I would say to the Chicagoland folks is, you know, I spoke at a little cocktail party they had last night of all the future sites and some of the past U.S. Open sites, country clubs that are here, and continue our history here in Chicago, because it's been a rich one and one that we're very proud of and fortunate to have to cultivate it.